Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, my next guest tonight is a chef, an educator, a television and podcast personality. Rick Bayless has been at the helm of some of Chicago's greatest restaurants, and this month he's celebrating the 30th anniversary of the Chicago gem, Frontera Grill. You know Frontera. This is one of Chicago's most successful restaurants, with reservations in short supply. That's because the Mexican restaurant not only reinvented Mexican food here in the Midwest, but it started a revolution of sorts, an authentic regional cuisine that showcased true Mexican flavors, not sort of your picante and sour cream and your Lowry's taco seasoning. Hey, no knock it. It's good. Bayless is celebrating his 30th anniversary with a huge party at the Modern Wing of the Art Institute this Sunday night. It's a fundraiser. All proceeds will benefit Rick's Frontera Farmer Foundation and Family Farm, both organizations supporting sustainable farming. Rick Bayless, my guest tonight at the big table. Rick, good to see you.
Good to be here, I'll tell you.
This is a big weekend for you. You got a lot going on. The James Beards are here. You got this.
James Beard Awards on Monday night. Our big 30th on Sunday night. Big parties. It's big parties all weekend long.
Yeah, that's the way you like it, though.
I do. I actually love parties. Yeah, so right. It's going to be fun.
Yeah. Okay, so how does it feel to have... To be celebrating this, I mean, to have 30 years of Frontera Grill. I mean, what are the emotions that come up when celebrating a milestone, an achievement like this?
I'm always looking ahead, so it's really hard for me to stop and then look backwards. And it wasn't until on the day of that 30th, which happened a few weeks ago, and we gathered all the staff together. So there's about 100 people or so in front of me, and we had a big cake, and we poured champagne for everybody. And I started to talk, and all of a sudden, I just broke because it's the room of Frontera. You know, it's not a huge restaurant. And that room of Frontera, I have occupied almost every day for 30 years, and it's my baby. And we started it at a time in our lives when we didn't have two nickels to rub together. We did it completely on a shoestring. My wife and I worked from morning to night for, I think, probably 2 years that we opened and closed the restaurant every day. And I just poured my heart and soul into it. And as I started to speak to our staff, all of a sudden, the memory of those first days and opening the doors and hoping somebody would come in, and we didn't have money to pay for any PR or anything like that. So It was scary, and thankfully, it's all gone really well.
Take us back. I mean, take us back to 1987. Yeah, well, okay. What was the impetus for opening a restaurant in Chicago?
My wife and I had moved to Chicago. I had never lived to Chicago before. After we had finished working on our first book, so we had spent 5 years traveling around Mexico. We had some consulting gigs that we could do, and we'd go do these consulting things, make some money, and then go back to Mexico. And we actually traveled to every single state in the Mexican Republic, cooked with local cooks, learned what was in the markets, learned what the regional cuisine was. And then we piled all that into a book. That was our first book, Authentic Mexican.
Yeah, right.
And we came back, turned the manuscript in, and then had to decide what we were going to do next. And I thought as I was turning that manuscript in, okay, I've written recipes, but who knows if people will be able to make this food or make it the way that it's supposed to taste? Because, you know, a recipe is just a blueprint. You actually have to bring something to it in the kitchen. So I thought to myself, having grown up in the restaurant business, having had my own catering business, done a lot of teaching of cooking, I think we need to open a restaurant and make this food because nobody's making it. The regional cuisine of Mexico wasn't even on anybody's radar screen. So we decided to do that. I wanted to keep it sort of upscale, but casual and accessible price-wise. And we opened up at a time, if you can believe this, there were 3 chef-owned restaurants in Chicago. 3.
In the entire city.
And apart from that, it was really just a whole bunch of restaurants that were owned by restaurateurs that hired chefs, and you never even heard their names. And we wanted to do something that was distinctive, that had real personality behind it. And we started, you know, figuring out where we could be. And, you know, River North at that time was not
North. Well, and also it's not like it is now. I mean, there's a lot of tourism and things on Clark Street.
Oh, there was
area.
No tourism.
I was going to say, at that point, 1987, it was a different neighborhood.
I could sum it up by saying that the most frequently asked question from people calling was, is it safe to walk across the street? Okay, so it was a really shady kind of a neighborhood. There's vestiges of it. You'll find some of the adult bookstores still in existence. But back in those days, it was solid, one after another in that area. And where Topolo Bampo is, everybody gets a kick out of this, was a bar called The Rendezvous, with a hotel above it that rented rooms by the hour. So it all sort of worked out perfect.
A great place to open up.
It was a great place to open up. But we had blinders on, and we were kitty corner from one of Chicago's, if not the most famous, one of the Chicago famous restaurants, and that was Gordon Restaurant.
Yeah.
And he had wanted to put Gordon, fancy Gordon Restaurant, in that neighborhood because it made it just a little exciting to go to his restaurant. But of course, all of his diners all came in cabs or limos, and ours were trying to find a way to get there without getting accosted.
You mentioned, this concept of the chef-owned restaurant, and it wasn't a thing in 1987.
Right.
It just wasn't done. What were some of the challenges of that? I mean, essentially, was the idea that a chef was not a small business owner or didn't have that acumen? What was stopping people from what we see today, almost that's just the norm?
It wasn't cool to be a chef. It really wasn't cool to be a chef. And when I told my mother that I was going to, because I had just finished graduate school, and she, I think, had a vision of me as a college professor someplace, and I just all of a sudden woke up one morning and I said, you know, my passion is really for food. And I was in anthropology and linguistics. And so I took that knowledge and I applied it to food, doing sort of cultural investigation. And I really explored Mexico from that perspective. And I wanted to sort of capture and share the real Mexico and its flavors. And so I told my mother, I'm going to go back into the restaurant business. And she had just retired from 37 years with a restaurant. And I said, I want to be a chef. And it was like, chef? Oh, no, that's somebody you hire. That's not somebody that you are, you know. But I have to say that in the 30 years, it's all of a sudden become really cool to be a chef. But I used to really say, oh, I'm a chef restaurateur, because it wasn't cool to just be a chef. Now I just say I'm a chef. I drop the restaurateur part off because it's cooler to be chef.
I feel like you had a lot to do with that. I mean, when we talk about, you know, the celebrity chef and people wanting to get into this business because of the success who came before, your name pops up. Rick Bayless, my guest tonight, celebrating 30 years of Frontera Grill, one of Chicago's best restaurants. There is a huge party to celebrate that,
yes.
An anniversary celebration. At the Modern Wing of the Art Institute of Chicago. This is going to be on Sunday, the 30th, this weekend, 230 South Columbus Street. It's a fundraiser. It's going to benefit Rick's Frontera Farmer Foundation as well as Family Farmed. Okay, we'll take a quick break. And what I want to do, I want to come back and I want to talk a little bit about those flavors.
All right.
The flavors that you discovered on that first trip to Mexico. It's a download here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. My guest tonight, Rick Bayless, celebrating 30 years of Frontera Grill. We were just talking about the good old days of 1987 on Clark Street.
I'm not sure anybody would have called them the good old days, but I lived through them, and I'm happy I did.
Rick has got a big anniversary celebration at the Modern Wing of the Art Institute of Chicago on Sunday night to celebrate the 30th anniversary. It's a fundraiser for Frontera Farmer Foundation and Family Farmed. You know, we talk about, I kind of said in the lead, you know, you kind of talk about the bringing sort of regional, Mexican regional cuisine to mm-hmm. Chicago, to the Midwest. It wasn't something that was being served here in Chicago in restaurants of really anywhere. So talk about where your love of that that cuisine came from.
Okay, well, I went to Mexico when I was 14 for the first time, and I when I got there, to tell you the truth, it was a family vacation, and I was the one that planned the whole thing at 14, and my parents went along with me. But I had been studying some Spanish, and I had been studying about Mexican culture, and I was just desperate to get there. And the interesting thing is, when I got off the plane, I just felt so at home. I knew I wanted to make Mexico.
You grew up in Oklahoma, right?
I grew up in Oklahoma, yeah. And in fact, my parents had a barbecue restaurant. So that's the flavor that I grew up with. And we ate Tex-Mex food a lot. That was like one of our family favorites. And we didn't really ever make it at home. We always went to a Mexican restaurant. And it was a straight old Mexican-American Tex-Mex flavored stuff. Cheese enchiladas with a kind of chili gravy on top of them.
Yeah.
We called guacamole a salad, and it was very simple cuisine, beans and rice on every plate, that sort of thing. Everything was covered with melted cheese. Nothing had a too spicy flavor to it. It tasted sanitized. That's all I can say is it tasted sanitized. And I had eaten Tex-Mex food in Texas, which I didn't think was much more along the bold way of thinking. But when I got to Mexico, I was just enthralled with the absolute singularity of flavor. Yeah. If something had lime juice on it, it had lime juice on it. If it was made with green chilies, you tasted those green chilies. If it was cilantro, boy, the cilantro gave this gorgeous kind of herby pop.
And
to
far
it.
From what we know as Mexican food in America, far it, from the Tex-Mex that you were talking
it
about.
It is. It really is. And it's a much more complex cuisine because they eat it every day, all day long. So you got to have all the breakfast dishes, all the lunchy dishes, all the dinner dishes, the soups, the salads. You've got to have all that sort of thing. And the one thing that a lot of people don't know about Mexico is that it's very regional, that the flavors that they are eating, say, in Veracruz are completely different than what they're eating out in the Yucatan Peninsula. And so I was really intrigued by that. But my first trip was only to Mexico City, which is super cosmopolitan. And I was in love with being in that big city. It's still like when we lived in Mexico, my wife and I, we lived most of our time in Mexico City because you can find anything and everything. It's sort of like saying go to New York and you can just taste all these different things because so many people have settled there. And that's what I found in Mexico City that kept drawing me back. But the diversity of the cuisine, the straightforward flavors that they could get, as well as the deep and rich complex flavors like the moles, were just mind-boggling to me. I mean, it literally took me probably 3 or 4 years to even understand what I was eating when I ate mole.
That's what I wanted to ask you. I was thinking about you with a training in the restaurant business, training as a chef, even today. How long does it take and what does it take in terms of experience to really fully understand some of the complexities that go into authentic Mexican cuisine?
It takes about as long as it takes to learn a language. So, yes, you can learn some words and you can throw those words into sentences, but oftentimes when you see tourists, say, go to Mexico and they have their little purse full of words that they're going to bring out, they say something in English and then they throw in a word that's in Spanish, hoping that somebody will understand what they have to say. So the same thing happens with a lot of chefs when they get started making Mexican food. They throw in a flavor or they throw in a part of a dish, but they can't really do the whole cuisine. And I will say that because I'm not a native Spanish speaker, even though that was my undergraduate major and my world is completely Spanish speaking that I live in. And so I speak fluently, but I don't speak like a native. And sometimes I think about that. I'm still learning nuances in the language and I'm still learning nuances in the food because it is a way of expressing sort of your very being when you cook in the real Mexican way or in any kind of cultural way.
I mean, it's so interesting too. And I would assume that the training that you have, that you give your chefs and others that work with you, it really does. It's more than just sort of following a recipe and trying to
it's way more than following
extract
a recipe.
Or trying to create a mole. You really have to feel it. You have to know it.
You have to know it, and you have to be willing to go down the path of making that flavor that way because the steps in preparing Mexican food are different than the steps you would learn for French food.
I was going to ask,
And culinary school, so we got a lot of culinary school graduates and interns and all that, and they're taught really to cook from a European perspective. That's what they teach. teach in culinary school. But when you come into our kitchen, you actually have to step aside from that. Yeah, there's a few techniques that are the same. They overlap. But to create the flavor that we're going after, you actually have to do things differently. So just take a simple red chili sauce, for example. And we would start with the chili pods. We don't start with chili powder. And the chili pods first have to be cleaned. So you take the stem off and you take all the seeds and veins out of it. And then they have to be toasted. So you have to decide, for this recipe, am I toasting them in oil, sort of like a quick saute, or am I going to do a dry toast? And that's the more common one in Mexico, is the dry toast. But boy, come out of culinary school, you would have no idea how to do that.
Even that part, just that part is different than what has been taught.
Then you have to soak them until they're pliable, but not too long. And then you have to drain them, and then you have to blend them, and then you have to strain them, and then you have to cook that base down, but you cook it in a completely different way than you would be. Like in culinary school, they would say, oh, put it in a pot and simmer it gently. No, you actually fill a pot with some oil, you get it raging hot, and then you pour that chili puree in there, and it sears and sizzles for like 15 or 20 minutes till it reduces down to the consistency of tomato paste. And that's where the magic happens.
Rick, is it hard to find the right people to work with? When they're training, when everyone is learning in the European style and you're trying to change things, do you have to find someone with the right temperament that's coming out of culinary school, or the right sort of understanding that you might be cooking with your left hand if you're right-handed?
Yep. I will tell you that most of the people that come to work with us, they're really intrigued by two things that we do in our restaurant. One is create those flavors. And they want to hang around long enough to really understand how to create those flavors. They don't realize that that's not going to take 6 months like it does in a lot of restaurants. It's going to take you probably 2 years to actually begin to master those flavors. And the other thing that they will really focus on is the fact that we work with so many farmers, which we're kind of off the grid. Most chefs probably in this town will call one of the big suppliers like Cisco, and they'll order 100% of what they're doing. Well, we don't work with those products. We work with other products. And so at the end of the night, ordering becomes like you have to make 30 orders because you got to get from all these different farmers and different suppliers that we have. So they want to see how you run a restaurant like that and how you maintain your labor costs and your food costs to make a successful, sustainable business. So we get people that come in and they really want to learn those things from us. But a lot of times there is a dearth of those people, I will say, because what I've heard from so many of the kids is that they really would love to come and work with us, but their parents say, I didn't just spend all that money on culinary school for you to go work at a Mexican restaurant.
Oh, no way.
Because
no.
there's this...
Still?
This,
no.
Well, there's this sort of stigma.
I think I can understand that argument maybe 15, 20 years ago, but if you came out of culinary school and said, Dad, I'm going to go work for Rick Bayless, be like,
well, that's
thank
different.
You.
Yeah,
you made it. Good, right?
Yeah, well, it's easier now than it used to be.
Rick Bayless is my guest tonight. He is celebrating 30 years of Frontera Grill here in Chicago, having a big party on Sunday night, the 30th anniversary. It's going to be at the Modern Wing at the Art Institute of Chicago, a huge shindig. It's a fundraiser for Rick's Frontera Farmer Foundation and Family Farm. All right, we'll take a quick break, and when we come back, I'd love to talk to you about a little bit more about the cuisine, but also, you know, just about the other restaurants that you've got going on, because you know, as a chef restaurateur, you've got a lot happening all the time. Rick Bayless, my guest tonight at the big table. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest in studio, Rick Bayless, the great Chicago chef, restaurateur, educator, author, television and podcast personality. Go down the list. Celebrating 30 years, the great restaurant Frontera Grill right there on Clark Street, you know, and having a big party to celebrate this weekend at the Art Institute as well. You know, I have to say, I mean, we've mentioned Frontera Grill, but, you know, we mentioned a little bit of Topolo Bambo. Joko's another one with a couple locations.
Right.
The great restaurant, Lena Brava and Cruz Blanca in the West Loop.
They're the babies.
I mean, you are far from sort of, you know, you and your wife at the beginning, you know, sort of having to walk into the kitchen in the morning and close the place at night.
Right.
You've created a Bayless empire, not to mention all the other things, the airport and the products that are on the shelf. You know, talk about that. Talk about the challenges that go with expanding your name, your brand, which is your name.
It's something that you have to do with a lot of thought and slowly. Remember, we're celebrating 30 years here, so it's okay. Somebody made a comment as when we opened Shoko, because Frontera Grill is right next to Topolobampo, the fine dining restaurant, and then Shoko's on the corner right next to Topolobampo. And somebody commented that at the pace that we were going, it was going to take us 100 years to take over that whole block, because we were moving at such a glacial speed.
Right.
But I will say that we have chosen to do most all of our growth when we had the staff to do it, when people were interested in taking over new projects. And that's been really good for us. One of the reasons that it's great for us to have all of these different restaurants right now is that if you just have one restaurant, you don't get to give your staff enough chance to grow. And now, because we have these other places, they can say, oh, a chef is moving on in another restaurant. So
because before they would leave.
They would just leave because they start their own restaurants.
Right.
Exactly. And so it's been really good for us to be able to grow, but we've only taken those steps as we've had the staff that was right there to do it. When we started our salsa company, the Frontera Foods products that you see in the grocery stores, it was because we had a regular customer who was in that world, and he just kept knocking on my door saying, I think we should do something together. I think we should do something together. And I went super slowly into that. A whole year we met once a week to see if we could like work together. And at the end of that, we decided to launch Frontera Foods. And that's been a real success for it. But it was because he came from the grocery world and I came from the chef world. And so we could join forces to do a really good product.
Back to the idea of having the right people around you, you know, and staff, because it is interesting that, you know, you have really a base knowledge of so much different cuisine from Mexico. I mean, you all throughout. So you could feasibly open up different restaurants around Chicago that are specializing in one type of regional Mexican cuisine.
Well, and that's exactly what we did with Linea Brava. People keep saying, it's like, you're going to just open up another Frontera in the suburbs, right? No, I'm not really interested in that, because I want to bring the different regional flavors of Mexico to Chicago. So one of the least known cuisines in Mexico, but one of the most exciting right now for me and for a lot of chefs, is the cuisine of Baja. So just south of San Diego, you cross over into Mexico and you're in Baja there. And that is the big wine growing region of Mexico. There's their equivalent of Napa Valley is called Valle de Guadalupe. And there are 110 wineries in that Valle and all these boutique hotels. It's gorgeous. It's an amazing place. But around a good wine growing region, oftentimes pop up all these restaurants, and they really capture the essence of the place. It's super rustic. People cook over a lot of wood fire. I don't know a single good restaurant in that area that doesn't cook over wood. And then they have all of the seafood from both the Pacific side and the Sea of Cortez. So it's super well known for seafood. So we opened a Baja restaurant, Linea Brava, that's an all wood fired kitchen. And it specializes in seafood and with that real rustic quality.
It's so good.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'm fascinated because, you know, I was just thinking about this, because the last time you were on the program was, I think it was a year ago, because that's when I think you guys opened right around Cinco de Mayo, right?
It was right around that time. We're coming up
and
on
you came
first.
On to talk about the opening night and, you know, there was a lot of fanfare around the restaurants and, you know, it's now just so, you know, happy anniversary for the
one year on
the other restaurants. You know, but I guess the question I have for you as a restaurateur and a chef and an owner is, you know, now, you know, the sort of shine has worn off of it's a brand new Rick Bayless restaurant. And now you're competing with the other restaurants in the West Loop. And this year, this month, there'll be new ones that will open up here,
this
there,
week.
Wherever.
It seems like every week there's a new restaurant that
how
opens
do you
up
as
there.
As I mean, how do tell us about the challenges in year one. Tell us about the challenges of just a regular weekend, far miles away from sort of the glam of the big lights of opening a restaurant.
Well, we work very collaboratively in all of our restaurants, and it's you open a new restaurant and you're going to have a whole lot of new staff members, even if you've brought your right hand over there to lead the kitchen or to lead the dining room, you still have an all new crew, so they have to get to know you and your style. And we have a very specific style that we work in the way that we manage people. And again, I will sort of underscore that it's very collaborative. And a lot of people are not used to working in that style. So it takes about, I always say 3 to 6 months for it to sort of settle a little bit for everybody to get to understand what we're really looking for in the way that we are going to handle our guests and running of the kitchen. And after 6 months, it starts to then become its own thing. And I'm a firm believer that it's just like a kid. You can't a restaurant's just going to do what it wants to do. And there's a nature nurture thing there, and you can invest as much as you can in the nature part of it, but then you have to sort of let it be what it's going to be, because you can't nurture it into something it doesn't want to be. And so that's the second 6 months, is really trying to figure that out. And by the time you hit 1 year, you should really know what that restaurant is, and you should be in love with it just for what it is, and that the team should feel like it just all fits together.
Well, there's an artistry, of course, to restaurants and yeah. what you're putting forward. And I think about plays or television shows or music, where there seems to be a little bit of time that's given to the artist to figure out what their voice is. Right. Do restaurants have voices?
Completely. Absolutely. You know, when you go to like a chain restaurant, you're getting something that is sort of a very carefully manufactured voice. And it's not necessarily a heart and soul kind of voice.
That's the pop music of restaurants.
Exactly. It's that kind of thing. Right. And you always know that it's going to be pretty. But you don't know if it's really going to be beautiful, okay? So what I try to do is to create that real beauty. And so that's really harder to do, because you got to dig deep inside yourself. You got to get all the cooks to be able to cook in lockstep with you. And that the flavor profile is going to be what you're looking for. And so that it's really an expression. But I always liken my role to that of like a conductor of a symphony or something, because you can get these musicians to play in many different styles depending on who's conducting them. But without the orchestra, there's no music. The conductor can't really do anything. And I think of myself as the chef that way, that it's all about what they cook, but they're really listening for my lead. And they're trying to understand what my vision is and what my flavor profiles are, so that they can hit that. And that's the reason my wife and I, we sit down like customers, as customers, in every one of our restaurants every week.
Really?
Yeah. So we eat a full meal. We're waited on by the staff and the whole thing. So, because I want to know if my voice is really communicating all the way to the guests.
Do you like this? As opposed to some of the other roles that you've had in your career, when you think about being the chef owner and you're opening the door and you're preparing and you're behind the the kitchen, at Frontera, and people can see you, or even, being at the guy who's opening a new restaurant. Do you like this phase of Rick Bayless, where you're the guy who essentially is going in once a week and trying out his own food?
Yes. Oh, but I've actually done that since the day we opened. I would always have the other cooks cook my food for me so that I could taste it. So for 30 years, I've done that part of it. But I'm in the restaurants every day. I've been in all of them today. And so I have that is, I'm a very hands-on kind of a person, and that's what I really love. I'm really curious, just naturally curious, which drives some people crazy, but I'm always thinking about how we can make things better. And if I get buried, like if I'm cooking one position on the line, all I can tell you is about that one position, but I have no idea what the full perspective of things is. And even though I did that for years in our restaurant, it was actually somebody who recommended to me, you need to step back, because you're going to lose perspective on what's going on in your restaurants. And so I love the role that I'm in.
You know, for you, I think about this a lot, just this concept of what you're really, really good at. And I think that's what shines and makes you a great personality. And whether it be on television or the podcast or even just the present, right now in the media, you're able to tell the story of your food.
Oh, thank you. That's exactly what we try to do.
But that seems to be something that not a lot of chefs can do. I mean, or not train that way. Mm-hmm. How important is it for you to be an ambassador or someone who can have that skill to explain to a customer, to someone who might be listening, exactly what they're buying into?
Well, first of all, if I approach it from the academic side and I give them a lecture about what this food is all about and so forth, it goes dead really fast. First of all, I always start with flavor. And I'll talk about texture, flavor on the plate. Notice the contrast of this crunchy garnish with this something that's been simmered for 12 hours. And then from that, I launch into sort of the techniques and how that relates to, say, the pre-Columbian kitchen or the ingredients that the Spaniards brought or the stuff that came from Southeast Asia on the Manila galleons. And the next thing you know, I'm sort of telling the whole history of Mexico. But it's all just based on this, the flavors and textures that are right in front of you in one plate of food. And I think that makes people understand and taste in a different way.
Do you feel like over time you've learned to do that? You sort of trial by error in the way that you've been in restaurants where you've been like,
no,
and then they're not paying attention. Like, I've got to change my story.
No, I've always been a storyteller, and I like to weave. I like to start all the stories with the food. There's a great book that came out a number of years ago, but they made a movie out of it, like Water for Chocolate, that starts chapter with a recipe, and it's that unfolding of that recipe that then becomes the story. And when that book came out, I was just so in love with that approach, because it's basically what I'd been doing my whole life, but never so brilliantly as what you found in that book.
30 years Frontera Grill is celebrating this weekend at the Modern Wing at the Art Institute of Chicago. Right. Big party to celebrate Rick Bayless and his Frontera Farmer Foundation family farm. It's a benefit to that. But 30 years. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I mean, there's so many.
We're not done yet.
You're not done. It's amazing to me. I guess my last question before we go is just, I mean, to think back to 1987, say there's only three chef-owned restaurants. Right. To think where we're at right now in this city, just on your block alone or your stretch of River North where there are restaurants that are world-class all around you. How do you feel about that? How do you feel about what you see around you in Chicago in 2017?
I absolutely love it, because when we first opened, there wasn't a farmer's market in Chicago. We couldn't lay our hands on any locally grown anything. During that very first year, my wife and I all summer, we would drive 2 hours outside of town to go to a farm stand and just buy stuff, because in Mexico, wherever there's good local agriculture, there's good food. And I couldn't find any around here, and I was just trying to bring in anything that I possibly could. And that's completely different now. If you're a chef in this city, you probably are an owner of your restaurant, and you're buying from local farms. And if you can just imagine how far we have come in 30 years, that's not very long to change the whole food system. And we're still working on that. We're still growing in that. But the food in Chicago has never been better than it is right now. And I'm just absolutely thrilled to say that I have lived through this transition and that I'm part of the chef community in this beautiful town.
Big part. Rick Bayless, thanks for being my guest tonight.
Oh, absolutely. Pleasure.